You're listening to the History Today podcast for October the 4th, 2012. In this episode, a mystery in the Bayeux Tapestry.
And the October edition of History Today features a very interesting tale put together by the medieval historian Joanna Lane-Smith, who is visiting research fellow at the University of Reading. And it looks at a moment called the Elgifa Interlude, which is a part of the Bayeux Tapestry, one of the most famous objects of medieval history. And yet there are still obscure passages there. And this one obscure passage, which Joanna refers to, involves a scene in which a woman called Elgifa is being touched by an unnamed cleric. And this sheds, if Joanna's theories are correct, rather a lot of light on the whole story of the Bayeux Tapestry. So, Joanna, who was Elgifa?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, really. There are lots of Elgifas in Anglo-Saxon England, particularly in the royal family, and there have been a lot of suggestions as to who this particular Elgifa might be. Some of them we've been able to discount. For instance, there was a story that Harold had married one of his sisters off to William the Conqueror, and it was thought that he had a sister called Elgifa, until it was realised that this is an error in someone's reading of the Doomsday Book, and she was sister to a completely different Harold. So we have confusing stories like that, which messed up the picture. We also have problems with the fact that women didn't always have just one name. The most famous Elgifa with another name is Emma, who was the wife first of Ethelred the Unready and then of Canute. And she was given Emma as her Norman name when she came over to England. She was named Elgifa, probably after Saint Elgifa of Shaftesbury, who was King Edgar's mother. And she is one of the most likely candidates for this Elgifa interlude, but no other source written after the Norman Conquest called her Elgifa. She always was called Emma in anything that was related to Norman sources. So we don't know.
For those people who are unfamiliar with the Bayeux Tapestry and the narrative that's there, can you give us some sense of where this Elgifa interlude appears within the tapestry?
Right. Well, it's fairly early on. The way the story starts is that you have Harold Godwinson, setting off from England. We don't know why, but he sets off from England across the continent, across to the continent. He is captured and then liberated by, in fact, William of Normandy. And he's at the point just before the Elgifa interlude. He's in William's palace. Harold isn't king yet, of course. Edward the Confessor is still king, and a lot of the Norman stories say that Harold actually went over to Normandy specifically to promise William that he would inherit the throne of England after Edward the Confessor. Obviously, the English stories are slightly different on that front. But anyway, the Elgifa interlude is just after this meeting, or perhaps the subject of the conversation that they had in the meeting, because it's a very strange way that it's portrayed. Elgifa is hovering above the ground. None of the other characters are, unless, you know, horseback or whatever. She's hovering above the ground, and she's in a very strange construction. It's not really a building. It's between some twisted pillars with beast's head on. And it's been suggested that this is deliberately meant to look old-fashioned, and that we're meant to understand that he's talking about something in the past, and he's talking about her in the past.
And this is very strikingly illustrated, actually, in History Today. It is a remarkable illustration, not least because of what appears beneath.
Absolutely. What appears beneath is a naked man who exactly mirrors the pose of the priest who is stood next to Elgifa. The priest is reaching out, and he has his hand on her face, whether he's hitting her, caressing her, you couldn't say. But then there's this figure underneath who is very well endowed, and that has given rise to a lot of suggestions that there was some sort of sexual scandal involved here. It's Though it's not the only naked image in the tapestry. There's actually quite a few naked figures, and there's been lots of debate about whether these are just decorative or whether they need to be understood as somehow a commentary on the images above. But because the Elfgifer, whose Norman name was Emma, was later involved in stories of scandal, she's one possibility. But the story is a lot later. There was another Elfgifer who was, in fact, also married to Canute. She was his first wife. And because there was obviously conflict over the Canute's sons wanting the throne, scandals came up quite early on regarding her, and claims that she hadn't really produced any children for Canute. These were just children she'd smuggled into the bedroom, and one of them was supposed to be the son of a priest's concubine. So that is also another suggestion of why we should have Elfgifer here, that there's a reference to this scandal. I take issue with that particular story because it doesn't make a logical sense to put it in there because she has no bearing on what would be discussed in the palace, basically.
So with your interpretation, if it's correct, what new light does that shed on not just the Elfgifer interview, but the whole story that's being told in the Bayeux tapestry?
What I'm arguing is that it definitely isn't Elfgifer of Northampton, Canute's first wife, the one who was associated with the early stories. That it's probably Emma, but just possibly Ethelred the Unread's first wife, who was also confusingly probably called Elfgifer. Who was the great-grandmother of the most obvious candidate for the throne at this time, but who was a child, Edgar the Etheling. And so if there was a scandal involving her, then he wouldn't be able to be king. It could be either of those, but probably Anna. But either way, what this is doing is suggesting that William had no more right to the throne, at least, than Harold, but indeed not much right, and that the importance of the Bayeux tapestry really is that it's concentrating on the relics, the oath that Harold famously swears on the relics, and it's only after this that William has a greater right to the throne than Harold.
And so why? Why would Elfgifer appear in this way? Why would it be open to interpretation? Who would offer in the construction of the Bayeux tapestry? Who would profit by this interpretation?
Bayeux Cathedral.
Right.
We think that the tapestry was made for Bayeux Cathedral because William's half-brother was Odo, Bishop of Bayeux. Mm-hmm. Certainly that's where it ends up. And Odo is quite a prominent figure throughout the tapestry. There was a number of sources about the famous oath, and they don't all happen at Bayeux. Mm-hmm. So by having this tapestry which celebrates the relics at Bayeux and saying, no, these are the ones that he swore on, until that point, God could have favoured either side, but because of what happened here, God mm-hmm. supported William.
Yeah.
That makes the relics at Bayeux much more important.
Yeah. And what happened ultimately to Elfgifer, if your interpretation is correct?
If it's Emma, eventually her son Harthacnut Canute did become king, and after that Edward the Confessor, who was her son, became king. But there was Edward was very unhappy that she'd favoured Harthacnut Canute first and helped him to become king. So she rather fell out of favour. So yes, she lived in England as the king's mother, but not in as powerful a position as she might have liked.
And it's interesting that, because my sense of the Bayeux tapestry is that it's been pored over for centuries, certainly the last couple of centuries by historians. What is the nature of the historiography of the biotapestry, of interpretation there? Is it still very much an open book, if you'll excuse the phrase?
Yes, it is, yes. There's still quite a lot being written and discussed on it. I'm fairly recently, one book came out saying, actually, it's really all just Norman work. It's made in Normandy. It's a it should be understood as sort of a French celebration, almost a Norman celebration. Most historians still say, no, actually, we think it was probably made in England, but obviously with a lot of Norman influence. There's still dispute as to whether we should understand any of the border images as commentary or mere decoration, whether it's saying that Harold was trapped into his oath, or whether this was that the whole purpose of coming over was to give the throne to William. So these are all still discussed.
So there's still much work to be done.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Joanna. It's a fascinating article. And it's available in the October edition of History Today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Joanna Lanesmith for that interview. You can read her piece, The Bayeux Tapestry, A Canterbury Tale, in the October issue of History Today, which is out now. Also in this issue, Bernard Porter re-evaluates the British Empire. Jeremy Black remembers the War of 1812. Onyeka looks at Africans in Tudor England. Stephen Cooper writes about the anniversary of Agincourt. And Klaus Dodds revisits James Bond at 50.